With the Redfin app, you'll know the moment your next place hits the market. Whether you're looking to buy your dream home or rent a sweet apartment, give Redfin your gotta-have-it wish list of property features, and you'll receive real-time notifications tailored just for you. Ready to see it up close and personal? Scheduling a tour is just a tap away. Don't wait to find your perfect match. Download the Redfin app and start searching today.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and tonight we continue our expectations series talking about Charlie Kolar and Aeneas Peebles. So joining me to do that is Gabe Ferguson. Gabe, how you doing?
Hey, Ken. I'm doing well. Thank you for having me on the show again.
Always a pleasure. Always great talking football with you, my friend. Let's look first at Aeneas Peebles here, who is a sixth-round pick, number 210 out of Virginia Tech, part of a very deep interior defensive line class that I don't know about you, and we might have been watching the draft together on day three on the show, but I was getting more and more worried about the Ravens entirely missing out on the defensive line component of this draft.
Yeah, I was also in that same frame of mind. I think, you know, heading to the draft, it was billed as one of the strongest positions, one of the better defensive tackle classes we've seen in some time, and they just kept kind of coming off the board, and you know the Ravens were taking other positions, and I was beginning to get a little concerned because it is a position of need on the team, and it was in theory a place where you could still get value in this draft. And in the end, I think they did get a good pick, and I do think he was a value selection where they got him. So I'm pretty happy that they were finally able to find the right player. I mean, we'll see if he's the right player, but I think he was at that position in the draft a very good selection, and I'm looking forward to, you know, hearing what your perspective is on Peebles.
Yeah, some nice value, I think, at that point in the draft. Peebles, a very small guy for the defensive line at 6'0", 282. I've seen him at the podium already, and he really looks small relative to most other players. He has decent quickness. He's unusual for a defensive lineman that he gives you a spin move, and you don't see that very often. But he did also have 28 bench reps. He's got some real strength. He's got some legitimate ability to penetrate, which I think is kind of exciting. He's used in his time at Virginia Tech mostly as a situational pass rusher, a guy they would bring in more than not on passing downs to play.
Yeah, and I think, you know, that was a need for the Ravens. They have really one and three quarters players you would think of as kind of like pocket pushers in the middle. Matabike obviously is probably like your star when it comes to that pass rush from the interior, but Travis Jones also, you know, has really developed into a good interior pass rusher himself. But I think that Peebles definitely fits more of the profile of the Matabike type, probably sub-package type player who is, you know, a pass rush specialist, probably because of his size for the majority of his career. That's probably what he's going to be. There are a few players who are smaller for defensive tackles that end up becoming starters, and maybe Peebles, you know, displays that ability to kind of grow into a bigger role. But, you know, there are a lot of traits that are impressive with him, you know, in terms of his quickness, his I think, agility, his ability to use that lesser stature, I think, effectively. You know, he kind of is willing to give some hip flexibility, some bend to get around some of the bigger offensive linemen. Whether or not that, you know, looks the same in the NFL as it did in college, it's hard to say, but I think if you look at, you know, his production in college, you know, he was a five-year player. The first 3 years were kind of like he didn't really do too much. Then he kind of really took off in his senior year at Duke, and then transferred to Virginia Tech, and also had a nice season at Virginia Tech as well. I think in that role as a pass rush specialist, that's really what he could potentially, you know, find a nice kind of like role in the Ravens defense, because they don't have a lot of depth there.
So when I was putting together my list of interior defensive linemen, I penalized players like Peebles a little bit, dropped them a little bit on my board because it's a for the Ravens board, and in the way we look at the draft as being a, you know, exclusively from a Ravens perspective. I think there's a lot of overlap with what he and Madubuike bring to the table because they're basically three tech only guys. They're a little bit too small to play the nose. I think in Peebles' case, there might be an exception, is that if the Ravens play from as many positive game scripts as they may this year, and certainly we hope that's a, we certainly hope that's a big part of the Ravens season, is that they're up by two touchdowns in the fourth quarter a lot. Then a guy like Peebles can help you close out games when you know the other team's going to have to pass basically every down, or you just dare them to run. You know, there's 8 minutes left and they're down two scores. Sure. You want to kill some time off? Go ahead, run the football. But you can put a guy like Peebles in as a one tech at that point and not be too concerned about what he is. And he'll give you lots of value as a penetrator in that spot. If they don't double team him, if they try and then double an outside guy, one or another, maybe they even try and double team Madubuike in that situation, which is actually more difficult to do with the three tech. But regardless, it's something they could attempt to do if they want to really rotate things. Peebles, I think, could give you a lot of value one-on-one at deconstructing the pocket fairly quickly. He has that kind of athleticism to do that. But the choice will often be, should I have, as they have in past years in like 2019, where you ran a lot of race car packages and a lot of rush nickel as one of their really frequently used packages. They could do that again this year because they have the outside linebacker depth to do it again. Or they could change to a player like Peebles, taking some heft off the plate of Travis Jones, who I think Travis Jones absolutely drives the Ravens pass rush when they're rushing for, and in particular on an early down, but any down he's in there, really. He commands a double team, and that immediately sets up three very good pass rushers for one-on-one relationships.
Yeah, I agree with everything you just said. He is very similar to Madubuike in terms of like his specific play style and the role he would fill on pretty much any defense. You know, they're both really that penetrating kind of B gap type player, three technique, more so than anything else. We have seen, you know, Madubuike be used in a little bit more, I would say, diversity or diverse roles in his alignments. You know, they have lined him up over tackles at times and had him kind of compress the pocket from the outside. And I think, you know, having someone like Peebles could allow you to have a larger front and still be an effective pass rush team if you wanted to do that. So you could actually have three defensive tackles and still have, you know, players that can actually win the one-on-one matchups and have a Travis Jones in the middle who would command double teams. And then, you know, that could allow you to potentially have more beef on the field as opposed to less. You know, and you mentioned kind of like the NASCAR package, the race car package that the Ravens have used in the past, where you kind of have more outside linebackers. They don't necessarily have that kind of tweener body on the roster anymore in terms of, you know, someone who's a big, and I mean, I guess you could say Tavius would be like your closest kind of, I don't know, at least physical style in that sense, but he hasn't really shown that ability to kind of be twitchy and win quickly as an interior rusher. So potentially that's something he could grow into, but I think as the roster is currently constructed, you know, having an extra defensive tackle who can actually push the pocket or and create some penetration is a thing that would benefit them. I mean, you've seen a lot of snaps from like a Broderick Washington on passing downs. And I think Peebles can take some of those snaps away and give it a little bit more impact.
I would agree with that. And they've done the 1-3 pairing method this last year where they had Jones and Madubuike on the field almost always together. Yep. Now Madubuike played some additional snaps, but Jones, almost every one of his snaps, Madubuike was on, I'll put it that way. I think they could do that with another player that they pair up with Peebles. And I guess right now it looks like that might be either John Jenkins, who I don't think is certain to make the team, by the way, but he, you know, has a pretty good chance. He certainly brought in on, I think, as nose tackle insurance that they hope will, you know, they either hope will pay off or that they'll be able to keep him around on the practice squad or whatever it might be. And then their second option would be Jason Jones, the Auburn guy. now that they've lost Hutmaker to Tampa Bay.
Yeah, I mean, I think those options are probably a little bit less kind of impressive or less upside for sure, in especially in terms of pass rush. A guy like Jenkins, you might see as kind of being that run stuffer that you can plug in there. I mean, he's definitely not Michael Pierce in terms of what he can do for you, but at least he's a big body. And that sometimes has its value. I was actually shocked when I saw that he was still playing NFL football. He's been around for such a long time. I didn't even realize he was, you know, a starter who had 500 snaps on the Raiders last year. Mm-hmm. So kudos to him for having such a long career, but you know, he's never been someone who's really like being a difference maker, I would say, on the defensive line, even when he was drafted fairly highly out of Georgia. But you know, he is big still. He still has that body type. He can plug a gap. So if that's kind of what the Ravens need in their depth at defensive tackle, I could see him making the roster. But I think they're probably going to just want to see what he looks like more than anything else.
Yeah, good bet. Let's get back to Peebles for a second. One of the things that kind of has dogged him throughout his college days was being a less than good tackler for a defensive interior player, which is something he's probably going to need to improve on to even get early down snaps, because it's very important to have defensive linemen who can make tackles. Now, it does sometimes happen with penetrators. They can get in, get a running back retract without making the tackle, but I can't help but think that Peebles being a less than super lengthy guy, that's maybe been a part of the missed tackle problem.
Yeah, I mean, there are standards of size and weight and length that NFL teams look for a reason. I would guess that's the reason why Peebles slipped to the sixth round, because he is undersized for the position. It really is more of an uphill battle for the players who are smaller. You just have less of an advantage when it comes to, you know, being able to get off blocks, to be able to wrap up players, to be able to, you know, just do things on the NFL field that when everybody else around you is larger, it makes a difference. So we'll have to wait and see how he's used, but there are players who have been very successful, who have been, you know, smaller at the position. I mean, obviously one of the best defensive players of our generation, Aaron Donald, was an undersized defensive tackle. And I'm not saying Peebles is Aaron Donald, but I'm saying players who have, you know, the desire, the work ethic, the talent can really be difference makers if they, you know, learn their craft well, if they focus on where they can exceed and try to mitigate the areas where they don't have as many physical gifts.
Kelly Gregg certainly falls into that category as well, as a guy who's a little undersized. He probably outweighed him by 30 pounds would be my guess, but drafted in a similar spot in the sixth round as Peebles was. All right. What else we want to talk about? You know, in terms of his pass rushing skill, which we need to at least give equal play to here, brings a high motor that I think was a real positive coming out of this draft, but also brings more of a toolkit than you typically see from an interior pass rusher. He's just got more in the bag, and he's a hand fighter. He definitely needs to be that given his arm length, but he's also a guy who can do a few different things to turn a half man move into potential penetration into the backfield. You know, he has a good rip move. We talked about the spin earlier that he can show you as a counter. He's got some things in his toolkit that are already there. And I'm wondering, do you think that plays better or worse for him working with Chuck Smith?
It's a good question. I mean, I guess you're asking, is he already kind of capped out in terms of like where his skills can be? I think that's possible. If he already is more advanced there, but I think it also gives credence to the idea that he has some skill. He has some worked on that craft already. He's not coming from an empty slate, so maybe it's something he can build on. I think a lot of, you know, working in those condensed spaces is technique driven. I mean, clearly there is physical talent that's required as well, but if he puts in the work, I think, you know, those things can be honed even more, I would estimate. So I would lean towards it probably being an area where he can kind of build upon what he already has, if he puts his mind to it. But, you know, I guess we'll have to wait and see with that. I mean, I think we have seen a lot of good results from Chuck Smith, but, you know, some players haven't really taken the steps that we want to see. Like, so it may just be dependent on who the player is and the kind of work they put in.
Yeah, odd combination with Peebles. He was in the 97th percentile among all interior defensive linemen for pass rush productivity, as it's defined by PFF. But he also had a very, very low finish rate of 16.2%. Now, interior defensive linemen tend to be a little bit lower, but I'd still expect, you know, 25% to 30% would be about normal for an interior defensive lineman. And he was below that. I don't have the median on me right here, so I can't tell you what that was. But it's more important to have that pass rush productivity number be high. That's kind of like your basis of pressures. That's the more stable number, and it's the number that he could tend to improve on. And if there might be something about finishing or closing that he'd be able to pick up more easily or exploit more naturally, what I think the other Ravens defenders are going to provide for him here.
Yeah. And I think I really like looking at numbers like pass rush productivity, because it gives you a sense of what he's doing on a per snap basis and not just like raw numbers. And it kind of gives you a sense of the role that he is in as well. And as we already discussed, he probably is going to have a similar role in the NFL than what he had in college. Like, he's not going to be a three down player, most likely. So, and given that opportunity, given his skill set, I think he is someone who can maximize that. I think that's what you want to see, especially in these like kind of late round draft picks, you know, someone who can come in and really take control over that small area where you're given the opportunity.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think that's always preferable. And if you can find a role, then you can start with that and you can build on it. But find a role that you're really the best at on the team, or you can provide value to the team at doing it. And I think that you're right on the money in terms of Peebles playing a limited number of snaps in a set role. And, you know, the Ravens are a rotational team. I mean, they depend and they run a fresh legs defensive line. They always have. I mean, they've never had done what the Steelers have tried to do with their interior defensive linemen, just, you know, run the snap count up to the moon basically on these guys and have these guys huff and puff around the field in the fourth quarter. The Ravens don't operate that way. So they should put Peebles in a better position to succeed than he was at Virginia Tech in terms of a good scheme around him and good freshness for him in a relative sense.
Yeah, I think so too. And I think he's actually in a pretty good situation in terms of his ability to take some snaps. If, you know, there should be some snaps available. We talked about the fact that defensive tackle it's not the deepest position on the roster. You know, we've had to fill it in with some depth players who may not even make the team. There is opportunity there. And if the Ravens are going to be the kind of team we think they are, a very good team that's going to have, you know, third quarter, fourth quarter leads, he's probably going to see a lot of snaps. And if he continues, or if he shows that he's, you know, doing well in those snaps, that's going to be a consistent role I think he can carve out for himself.
Yeah, this is one of the really interesting, by the way, math things about the defensive line you can look at. The Ravens a couple of years ago were playing some closer games, and I'm thinking like the 22 season really now, where they didn't have the real dominant performance in terms of points scored, points are allowed, or at least they played a lot of close games. It was true in 21, maybe even to a greater extent. But the 2 years that they finished without Lamar Jackson, they had to deal with some situations that were not ideal, and they played over two defensive linemen per play. And I think they did still in 23, and it was largely because of injuries early in the season at that outside linebacker position. So they played less rush nickel, which is your good opportunity to have a one defensive lineman play, then play race car, which can be a one or a zero defensive lineman that you play in there. And that really changes the whole picture of things. So your defensive line can get a lot of respite, a lot of snap respite from having more positive game script snaps where you can move outside linebackers and bring them inside. I think this 2025 Ravens team should be back to that. I think they're going to be five active outside linebackers per week. And I think it's a chance to have that, you know, drop that number of defensive linemen per play down to the 1.8 range, 1.85 maybe. And that means your five guys have to average 37% of the snaps instead of 44% of the snaps where they were when the total was 2.20 per play. So it's just, there's relief comes from an unexpected places in terms of defensive line snaps. And I'm still not a favor of ever carrying four defensive linemen because you think you can get away with it like that. But I do think you can keep the guys fresh for most of the season by having some rush nickel snaps sprinkled in there.
Yeah. And I think also just in terms of your pass rush, that's essentially what you're getting at here, but your pass rush specifically, you want players you can keep fresh and players that you feel confident can actually be an impact player on the field. So whether that's an outside linebacker or whether that's a defensive tackle or, you know, defensive end or however you want to define some of these players on the roster, the more players that you can rotate in some fashion, the better results you're going to get from all of them, because, you know, wear and tear does happen over the course of the game, over the course of the season. You know, some of these stretches that the Ravens are going to have can be pretty tough. You know, they have like the three road games in a row this season. You know, last year they had that, was it the four games in like 18 days or whatever it was. Like, mm-hmm. NFL schedule can be pretty brutal at times. And that, you know, especially on veterans, you know, that the wear and tear can really build up. And sometimes you might see someone who just like is not performing at the level that he would be expected just because he's dealing with nagging injuries, dealing with exhaustion. And, you know, just having another body that you can throw in there and not be a kind of a zero out there, it makes a difference.
Yeah. Yeah, it does. I mean, they got lots of value out of a player like Brent Urban these last couple of years. Yeah. Eating a lot of snaps and doing a pretty good job of it personally, but more than anything, it was rest for the other guys. I think in a lot of ways, Broderick Washington's contribution has basically been that the last couple of years. I don't think he's lived up to the contract that the extension he signed, and that's been kind of a disappointment from that perspective, but it has helped the team stay rotationally fresh. All right, how about we move on and talk about a good season for Aeneas Peebles? What does that look like to you?
Yeah, I think a good season is kind of what we've talked about in terms of just finding a role. You know, somebody who is going to probably, and I like to think about this in terms of snaps and like how much he's on the field. So I'm thinking maybe something like 15 to 20 snaps a game. I think it's a reasonable amount given like the standard kind of like defensive tackle rotation that the Ravens have done in the past. It would most likely be tilted towards pass rush snaps, I think it's probably where he'd be best suited. And if he can be someone who can take on like a more specific sub package role where he's in there in certain, you know, alignment, certain packages, and be like a consistent contributor in that, I think that would be like the ideal scenario for him to actually, you know what his role is, come in when it's like third and seven and longer or whatever it may be, and just put your, you know, pin your ears back and get after the passer. And that's going to be what he does.
Yeah, I think that's very similar. I'll say what I said. Has a solid preseason in camp and earns the backup DT role. I think the distinction is subtle there because he's going to be on the team no matter what. I think so. I think he's a sure thing to make the team, yeah, based on what the roster looks like right now. Plays a limited rotational role of approximately 18 snaps per game behind Matabike with play quality at or near the league average. Doesn't have to be anything terrific this first year, just at or near the league average. And I'm largely looking at how effectively he rushes the passer in that, because I think it'll be mostly pass rush snaps. In aggregate, he could be there with pass rushing contributions. He could possibly be there with run contributions as well, but in aggregate, at or near the league average would be a good season to me. And again, it's like kind of like offensive linemen. It's okay to start out a little bit below the bar in your rookie year. Have a CC minus year. That's fine. It generally means very good things for an offensive lineman because the position is complex to learn and master. I think it's probably true of defensive linemen as well. I do think maybe because Aeneas is coming with a little more in terms of polish as a pass rusher, they may get some focus snaps from him that would allow him to shine more quickly than I would expect an offensive lineman to.
Yeah, I think it's more of like a specific skill set. You can come in and do the thing that you've done. You don't necessarily need to learn like the plays like an offensive lineman would, you know, in unison with, you know, a zone blocking scheme or know exactly, you know, the leverages you're supposed to be reading and the blocking that you're supposed to be doing on combo blocks, things like that. You're pretty much just told go rush the passer. I think that's one of the easier things to do as a rookie coming into the NFL. And we've seen a lot of NFL players, rookies in this kind of role, pass rushers specifically, who can come in and have an impact right away, especially if they are not given too much on their plate. Kind of a very specific role. You just do that thing that you, the one thing you're good at. And if the coaches know how to utilize that, it may even be even better and better realized.
All right. What does a great season look like?
So for a great season, I think I'm going to get a little bit more specific in terms of the kind of the stats. I mean, obviously it's going to build on what the good season would be in terms of a role. I think potentially more defined and more snaps, probably, you know, probably looking more towards the 25 to 30 snaps a game. And this is just because his performance is so good that he's forcing his way on the field. You know, he's maybe in more packages with Madubuike because that's their best pass rush duo. Or he's giving Travis Jones more of a spell and being able to contribute more on early downs. I think he could potentially get 5 or 6 sacks in that kind of role. I think that would be a great season from him. I mean, we've seen some rookies come in and have good seasons in the past. I'm thinking about like Pernell McPhee, Timmy Jernigan, that kind of player who's come in and been an immediate impact, you know, pass rusher as a rookie. And I think he could potentially do that. To me, that would be a great season.
Yeah. Oh, that certainly would be a great season. I think it kind of would clear the 80th percentile bar by a lot for me. So I don't quite have it as high, but I say Fitzraven's scheme / needs for rotational defensive tackle, who is also part of pass rush packages with Madubuike on obvious passing situations and plus game scripts. That's what we talked about earlier. Snaps are limited to approximately 20 to 24 per game. I think there is an upper limit on how much he can play just because of the overlap with Madubuike's skill set, but with quality at or slightly above the league average. Ravens find ways to utilize him more as the season progresses and look to lean on him more in 2026. In a lot of ways, I still look at the season as being something where he's setting up who he can be at 2026. If he surprises everybody, you know, I think the Ravens will be very fortunate if that's what happens. It'll really mean they got great value on the pick if he were to turn in a season like what you just described as a rookie with some really, even if he didn't get 6 sacks, if you get the pressure that you would expect at the bottom of the pyramid for a 6 sack year, that would be pretty freaking great.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, sacks are obviously the easy, you know, kind of statistic to look at, but it could definitely just be, you know, like we talked about pass rush productivity, you know, is he in that like 8 to 10% range, which is pretty good for a defensive tackle. Mm-hmm. I think that would maybe even less than that. If he's like, you know, around 7 to 8%, that's solid. Is he, you know, finding a way to work off of the players around him, you know, the attention that a Madubuike would get or attention that Travis Jones would get, or even, you know, the edge rushers, you know, away, or Van Noy or Mike Green, you know, being able to kind of work in tandem with those players and take advantage of, you know, the kind of overall package that, you know, that Orr is putting out there. So I think that just being part of that consistent pass rush and being able to kind of take what we saw in the past couple of years to that next level would really kind of elevate the entire defense as a whole. And I think if he is at that, you know, 80, 90,
Shop the Sherwin-Williams 4-Day Super Sale and get 40% off paints and stains June 6th through the 9th. With prices starting at $29.39, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Shop the sale online or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
90 percentile percent, you know, performance level that really will help raise the whole defense. And that's obviously what you would love to see from a late round rookie.
Yeah, I would certainly love that. Well, let's move on. Talk a little bit about Charlie Kolar, who's the other half of this. He was active for 15 of 19 games. He missed weeks 13 to 16. I don't remember what the nature of the injury is. I do remember that the Ravens were really missing him very badly. So it might've been a soft tissue thing. I don't remember exactly what the problem is. Could have even been a bruise, but even more than in past seasons, he became a more extreme run blocking specialist. So the Ravens had used Patrick Ricard on the line some in previous years. This year was much more of Charlie Kolar. 215 of his 285 snaps came as a run blocker or runner. He actually had a couple where he took a direct snap under center. He might have had one where he took one on a jet play as well. Yeah, that's a very high percentage of your snaps to be on run plays.
Yeah. It was one of the things that I was actually kind of surprised by when I went back and looked through the numbers, just because that is so specific in his role. And it's to the point where it is verging on being too much of a tell to the defense. Mm-hmm. That was something that I thought about immediately. And I didn't look through all the snaps that he was. I mean, I don't know if there's even a place where I could find that, but when he was on the field and if it was a pass, my guess is 90% of them were play action. So I think he's in there and, you know, in the 2-3 tight end packages, he's on the field with Ricard. If they're not running the ball, they're probably trying to do some sort of play action, look for a shot play. And he's better or worse. I mean, having a good impact in that role, you know, I mean, the run blocking definitely benefited when he was on the field. So, is it a tell potentially, but does it matter if you have, you know, excellent blocking and Derrick Henry and Lamar Jackson? Maybe it doesn't matter.
And you know, maybe it doesn't matter. So let's start with that, but I'll give you another, maybe, is it a bigger tell to have Ricard on the line or to have a sixth offensive lineman in the game? Because they used plenty of both of those, including times where they're trying to run out the clock, and it really was a tell, no doubt about it. In those game scripts, when you've got a positive game script and you really are trying to run out the clock, you usually don't care too much about what you're giving away to the offense, or don't care as much to put a sixth offensive lineman in the game. And there were times, including the second drive against the Steelers, when they ran the ball, what was it, 15 straight times or whatever it is for the touchdown? Yeah. That, by the way, there's no drive that I want to go back and watch more times than that particular drive, pretty much in Ravens history. Okay, I can maybe think of, you know, driving down 92 yards against the Steelers leading to the Troy Smith touchdown. Maybe that's in the same, like, camp as that, but this is just, that drive was a thing of beauty. Just a bludgeoning of an ancient rival with, you know, in a way that was brutal. I don't know that of the various ways that you can give away that you're running the football to the other team, that having Charlie Kolar is on the field is too bad, or is the worst of those choices, I guess is how I'd say it.
Yeah. And that's fair. I mean, he did have a few, you know, passing opportunities, receiving opportunities. If you look at some metrics, you know, yards per route run, he's actually quite good, very small sample size, and it was skewed by one large play. But still, like, there is some potential with him as a pass catcher, and he, you know, has the kind of prototypical size, decent athleticism. He can make plays in the open field if he gets the ball. So that is a threat, you know, having him there. I would say, in terms of like a passing threat, he clearly can do more for you than like Patrick Ricard can. So, you know, having him out there gives you at least that option to make the defense at least have some sort of respect for him as more than just a blocker. So I like that aspect, you know, that ability for him to, you know, at least make the defense think, you know, keep him a little bit honest.
Right, 131 yards he had on 11 targets this last year. And in a weird twist of fate, he moved to the very top of yards per target among all Ravens career receivers with 20-plus targets at 10.3. Now, the guy he passed was Gus Edwards, in terms of doing that, who was at 10.1 when he left the team. He left the team with the highest yards per target and yards per carry of any player in Ravens history. But he is part of the story in terms of the complete success they've had in throwing to the tight ends the last 2 years. He has been an inline guy, which is so very different than the guy we thought we got from Iowa State 3.5 or 4 years ago, whatever. Well, I guess it's 4 years ago now, right? 3 years ago now, right? 3 years ago now.
Yeah, this is his fourth, going into his fourth year, right? Yeah.
And it's, you know, everything in that off that Iowa State offense was fed through him. He was literally Chamberlain in the post, as I've said many times on this show. So it's very different for him to have inline blocking and special teams be his two biggest responsibilities now. But hey, that's where we are.
Yeah. And I mean, kudos to him for, you know, trying to, I mean, I think it was before last season, there was definitely some stories about him bulking up, you know, getting stronger, getting more physical, really leaning into the role that he had on the team, because, you know, he wasn't that player at Iowa State. He was the guy who was a flex tight end, who was, you know, running out of the slot, running routes downfield. I don't think that those abilities have gone away, and it will be interesting to see, you know, with the all of the Ravens, you know, tight end position being in flux. I think after this season, it's going to be interesting to see, you know, how they envision him and what they think of him in terms of a long-term contributor. But in this role, you know, I think it is always going to be a little bit limited. And, you know, unless there's some health issues that happen. But he does what he's asked to do. And I think he's better than a lot of the kind of like part-time players that the Ravens have had in the past. And he's really stepped up to kind of find his niche on the team and give everything he can. So I think a lot of players would kind of shrink away. But I feel like he's been like one of the ultimate team players on the Ravens over the past 4 years.
Yeah. I've been very happy with all three tight ends. The role of the tight ends in the Ravens has dropped tremendously with all of this additional efficiency they've had. They dropped from 190 targets in 22 down to 110 in 23 when they first had the breakout year of 140 roughly passer rating. And then they ratcheted that up all the way back to 128 last year. And I can't imagine any one of these three tight ends is really happy with their targets right now. I think they probably all want more, and hey, they're playing at the level they are. Part of me says that any additional targets they get will be marginal targets, and yeah, maybe they'll be at a higher passer rating than they would normally expect to have, but they'll be at a lower than 140 passer rating. I can virtually guarantee that if there's more contested balls thrown to the tight end, if they're just schemed more as a part of the offense. But the fact that Kohler has been a part of this and has been a legitimate component to it, not just some tag along component, he's provided real value as a run blocker. We talked about to a certain degree. I'm not saying he's the ideal pass blocker, but as tight ends go, he's a pretty good pass blocker, or a decent pass blocker, I'll say. And he really helped out Roger Rosengarten this last year. They spent a lot of effort trying to keep Roger Rosengarten clean from the first initial contact from that left defensive end or edge player on that side. And to do that, they really had to use a lot of chip blocks. So some of what you see, even in terms of the pass plays that are there on the ledger for Kolar, are really chip blocks that PFF won't count in his blocking grades. So if he took just a chip block then goes out on a route, they won't have that in a pass blocking stat. And yet really restricts his.
Yeah, but that has a huge impact. You know, there's a lot of players that the Ravens have to go against, you know, like the TJ Watts of the world. And then in the division, the Myles Garretts, you know, whoever it may be, that it makes a huge difference. It's to slow them down by a second or a half second, put a hand on them. It really makes that extra just split second for the, you know, the receiver to get open on the route downfield, to not have that instant pressure that might get there otherwise. And, you know, I'm hoping that someone like Roger Rosengarten will continue to grow. And I think we saw growth for him over the course of his rookie year. And maybe he becomes more of a, you know, one-on-one pass blocker as, you know, as he continues to develop. And that necessity to chip becomes less and less. But even, you know, someone like Ronnie Stanley is going to benefit from it. Any tackle who knows how to use that help is going to benefit from having that. And it's just going to help the offense in general. If there's a player who's willing to give that little extra contribution and at, you know, his own, I guess, you know, it's not going to show up on the stat sheet, like you said. So that's something that is, you know, something that he's only going to see in the film room, you know, after the game, and he's going to get the props from his position coach.
Yeah, I can't believe they don't really understand the value of him. I think they do, and that's why they continue to use him the way they do. I'll tell you another place where Charlie Kolar's importance is probably going to be understood to a greater degree this season is on special teams. He was a five-unit player this last year. Now, four-unit players are not that uncommon. There's a lot of guys, particularly linebacker size, tight end size, who play kick and punt coverage and return. But he also plays on the field goal kick unit. He's a wing out there blocking in that unit. And so he, you know, is a core special teamer. He guarantees his own activation every week through that. Not that there'd really be a question at this point in his career about that. But certain players like Tylan Wallace, where it might be a question whether or not they would be kind of guarantee their own spot on the roster by being such a good special teams player, you can't be without him. And then, oh, he also contributes on offense in a certain way. This year should be an even bigger deal for that, because with the 35-yard line punitive touchback rule, there's going to be more kicks returned, and you're going to have to be more stable and able to make sure that you don't mess up your lanes on the return. And he'll be hopefully good at that.
Yeah, I mean, the Ravens definitely love their special teams. I think it's whenever they don't perform like the best unit in the NFL, it's a shock to both the Ravens and to the fans. And we've seen that in the past. You know, the past couple of years, there have been a few gaps in special teams performance that we haven't seen as frequently. So having continuity, I think, helps. You know, there has been a lot of change in the past few years. I think that's probably part of the contribution to some of the lower performances. And I would say that over the course of the season, it's been corrected. Oftentimes it's kind of like the beginning of the year, there's some errors, and then they get, you know, shored up over the course of the season. And they end up being a pretty good unit by the end of the year. But I think, you know, having somebody who's been in that role for, you know, year after year after year really helps solidify that unit as a whole and give, you know, that veteran kind of experience and help make sure that those little snafus that happen less frequently.
All right, let's talk about a good season for Charlie Kolar and what that looks like.
So I think it's just kind of more of this kind of linear progression in terms of snaps. And it's probably not going to be a huge boost, because the same players that have been blocking him for snaps are the same players that they're still there. So, you know, I think he averaged about 20 snaps per game in 2024. I think, you know, if he sees a slight uptick, you know, if he's in the 20 to 25 range again, I think that's a good season. You know, maybe he gets a few more looks in the passing game. I think he has done pretty well, as we discussed, in the limited opportunities that he's had. So that might be, you know, where you're looking to see a slightly better season, or what you consider a good season, you know, maybe 20 to 25 targets as opposed to, you know, 10 or 12. And maybe, you know, 15 catches for 200 yards. That would be a good season for him.
Most players who played a full season, who are just coming off a full season, I would be loath to project a big increase in target share, particularly at a crowded position like his. But because his targets are so low, I think the chances are, if he's healthy, he'll play, he'll get significantly more targets, because there's a good chance that one of the other two will not stay healthy. So you've also always got that, you know, potentially working in your favor. Okay, here's a good season for me. Is continues to provide multifaceted contributions as a blocker, receiver, and special teams player. Per snap and per target productivity remain high despite relatively few routes run. He won't continue on at the kind of yards per target number he had this last year, where he's over 11. I don't think he's likely to be over 10, but I think he could get a few more targets at 8.5 yards per target, say, and remain still fairly high productivity in terms of a per snap basis on relatively few routes run. And again, no matter what he does, he's got to start with the blocking. That's where his biggest contribution is going to come.
Yeah. Yeah. I think we're pretty much in alignment there. It really does stem, or his success is really mostly in the run blocking and pass blocking, as we mentioned, but that's really where his most value comes from at least in the current role. And I don't think that would change by design.
You're going with a great year?
Great, yeah. So this is one of those unfortunate situations where a great year for him would mean a not so great year for another player. So that would probably mean, you know, some sort of health issue with either Mark Andrews or Isaiah Likely. And he would have to fill in more of a pass catcher. And to me, you know, it would mean more snaps, probably closer to the, you know, 400, 500. I think unlikely that he will be too much more than that, even if there was a significant injury. But being on the field, you know, half the time, and then having more opportunities in the passing game, to see a significant boost there, probably, you know, if he is taking on a second tight end role, I would imagine we're looking at, you know, 45 to 50 targets, maybe more, depending on how good he plays. And then, you know, just trying to be someone who's a third down option, really, I think is probably where he would be the most use on in the offense, similar to what the tight end normally plays. Obviously, play action, I think, is somewhere where he could exceed as well. Kind of, you know, on those leak plays, the seam plays, you know, he does still have that good frame. I think he runs good routes, and he has decent speed, I think, as we discussed. He has shown that given the limited opportunity. So I think he could be a useful pass catcher, but it wouldn't be a high volume role for him, even in a situation where he's on the field more. You know, the other tight end is probably going to reap more of that benefit than he would.
Yeah, I mean, I would certainly agree with that. And you know, both Andrews and Likely are probably saying, yeah, I could pick up more snaps if the other went down. They each played about 700 snaps, though, and the Ravens still are about the heaviest team. Well, they really are the heaviest team in the NFL still by a wide margin, even though they've cut down tremendously in terms of total tight end snaps, tight end OL6 and fullback snaps per play. But if something were to happen to Likely or to Andrews, I think the first thing would be there would be a ratchet up in all three of the other guys' remaining snaps that whichever one didn't get hurt, plus Ricard and Kolar, would both get more snaps. But then I think there would also have to be a move to more 11 personnel, more, you know, gimmicky stuff like a pony backfield and other things to take up some of the offensive burden and maybe maintain the fresh legs nature of the offense, which I think is going to be something we really see in spades this year from Monken, is that they've got so many horses in terms of who they can put on the field, including six deep at wide receiver, you know, the tight end group being what they are, the fullbacks, you know, two good running backs at least that they can put on the field, and potentially three if they get health out of Mitchell this year. With all those weapons, fresh legs is just going to seem like a very optimal way to run that offense.
Yeah, I mean, they're similar to what we talked about, I think, on defense. You know, the Ravens are a deep team. They have players that they can rotate. They can rotate bodies at you in the running game. And when they're ahead, that's going to be the way to close out games, run, eat up clock. And that's going to be a big part of what Kolar does. And, you know, maybe his snaps will pick up if the Ravens are blowing teams out. You know, that could be a place where he just sees his snaps go up because, you know, likely and Andrews might not be in the game in the fourth quarters because they don't need him out there. So it could be the Charlie Kolar show when mm-hmm. it comes to closing out games, him and Ricard, and maybe an extra offensive lineman too. So we'll see how these games go. I mean, it's easy to say that now that the Ravens could be, you know, this team that we expect them to be on offense. I mean, we have seen that from them the past couple of seasons. I don't see any reason why it would not be there, but it's fun to think about at this point. But in the end, if Charlie Kolar has a great season, it's probably not the best thing for the Ravens offense, just in terms of, you know, the player that he's probably going to have to be replacing. Unless he has some serious, you know, skill that we just haven't seen on display yet, it's probably going to be in a lesser of a pass catcher role than the guys ahead of him, unfortunately.
All right, I'll quickly through my great season. Develops a connection with Lamar as either a primary or bailout receiver that leads to this significant expansion in targets. This could happen also due to injury. So we're on the same page on a lot of this stuff. And is effective as a receiver in terms of yards per target. Again, I'd set the limit at 8, at the minimum 8.5. Ravens work to extend him. I think that's the biggest thing that I could say would make Charlie Kolar's season great if the Ravens are really working to extend him. They're probably going to want to get 3 of their 4 guys re-signed, which might mean 1 early extension, plus Ricard, who I think they can get is the lowest hanging fruit of the group, and then 1 other that they can extend at the end, whether that's, you know, whoever might be left over. And they do have the potential use of the franchise tag with Isaiah Likely.
Yeah, I think that Likely will get tagged. That's my expectation because of the relative cost of tagging the tight end is I think worth it. And I think that they will work to extend Kolar as well on what it would probably be a relatively team friendly, you know, standard Ravens 3-year, you know, $10 million, whatever kind of deal that mm-hmm. the role player gets that, you know, is special teams contributor, you know, backup on whatever position he plays. I think that's where that value lies. And I think he would be worth giving that type of contract to.
Okay. All right. He definitely is one of the players then they should be talking about giving it to right now, as opposed to later. In a way, the guys who make sense, the closest comparisons to him were Ardarius Washington, who, boy, it would have been great if he'd already signed something like that from his perspective. I mean, obviously the Ravens would have lost out a little bit with the injury, but it would have been great from his perspective. And hopefully other players will look at that and say, hey, you know, there is really some risk mitigation is worth it. Because in the end, yeah, the Ravens are going to pay a salary this year, but Ardarius has basically lost a big chunk of his 2026 salary, plus is taking risk of ever getting that big contract for the first time from the fact that this injury occurred. So I'm hoping a player like Falele, or a player like, assuming they want to make that deal for Falele, or a player like Kolar, would be good mid-range extensions that would be relatively amenable for both sides.
Yeah, I think those are the two players that make the most sense for that kind of contract. Players who have, you know, had decent amount of success on the field, but haven't really, you know, been significant contributors. You know, I guess Falele would probably be a little bit more of a contributor considering he started for a season. And, you know, was, I would say, average player at the position. So there may be some team who would actually want to give him more money, potentially, than the Ravens would, in Falele's term. I think Kolar is someone that probably is not going to get a lot of money on the open market, but unless he has a breakout season.
You know, I thought that too. And then we saw what happened to Josh Oliver a couple of years ago.
That's true.
And, you know, we talk about paying Kohler 3 years, $10 million or whatever. And then we look back to the Boyle contract or the Oliver contract. And we see that, you know, those guys got a lot more money than that with, you know, good blocking and little receiving, basically. So we'll have to see how this plays out. I'm not sure Kohler's going to be as cheap as everybody thinks he's going to be. But I would love it if they could find some nice middle ground and start the ball rolling on some of these extensions. I mean, DaCosta mentioned having a lot of balls in the air right now. I presume that means talking extension with a lot of these third-year players. And yet, you know, we haven't seen any of those happen. The only one we saw was the Derrick Henry one, which, yeah, you know, great player, but definitely carries some risk and is using a hefty portion of the available cap room on him as opposed to some of these other guys.
Yeah, I mean, I know this isn't the focus of this podcast, but, you know, Linderbaum, Travis Jones, I think are the two that are obvious ones that you'd want to get done. And they aren't going to be cheap. And, you know, if they play a Pro Bowl caliber a year, it's not going to get any cheaper in the offseason either. So those are the ones I think Linderbaum probably is, you know, they mentioned in the whole not giving him the fifth year option, which clearly is the right move, but they want to keep him as a Raven. I think, you know, you invested him in his first round pick. So it makes sense to try to give him a fair extension.
That part is a sunk cost, and they already lost the sunk cost in terms of not being able to exercise the fifth year option is the way I look at it. Doesn't matter whether he's drafted 25, 35, or 85 in terms of what they perceive his valuability to be now. It's whatever it is based on his play. I'll add to that, his franchise tag value is nil or negative for next year for the same reasons that they couldn't give him the fifth year option. So I'll pose the question to you this way. What's your number for Linderbaum? 4 year deal. What's your AAV you're willing to toss out for him?
Probably in the 14 to 16 year per year number. I mean, I don't think it's a highest center contract, but it would be in like the top like 5 to 10 range. I think that's where he slots in terms of his performance.
Right. I think that would put him at number three. I'm not 100% sure of that, but Cam Jurgens re-signed recently for $17 million per year. And I mean, any responsible evaluation of Cam Jurgens is not going to put him at the top of NFL centers. I mean, it's just not going to do that.
Yeah.
And the problem is Creed Humphrey is only making $18 million per year. And he's so far emergent from the remainder of NFL centers. The scale now makes no sense at all. It's like the Jurgens contract is the Deshaun Watson contract for centers. So it's going to be really hard to get Linderbaum back on a deal that does not reset the market at center. And yet I think that's the appropriate thing to do is to just stick to your guns and say, hey, look, we understand that Cam Jurgens, you know, the contract for him doesn't make any sense. And that Philadelphia is playing, as Voss puts it, by a different set of rules to use all this void year money to try and get that kind of thing done. We're not willing to do that. We're willing to give you $16 million per year. And we think that's your relative position to Creed Humphrey. And
I mean, to me, that's fair. I mean, yeah. And if he doesn't like that, he thinks he can make $20 million on the open market or 18 or whatever, you know, let him go explore that. Maybe there's somebody who gives him that money. I don't think the value of the center is worth to make a top of the market contract for. It's just not. And if he was Creed Humphrey, then maybe you can make that argument, but he doesn't separate at that from other good centers that much. So you can find that you can make 90% of a Tyler Linderbaum for less than what he's paying. That's my opinion.
Yeah. I'm right there with you. All right. Well, Gabe, always great talking football with you. Tell folks where they can reach you online and talk football.
On Twitter, I'm at Gabe Fergie. Blue Sky Social, the same handle at Gabe Fergie. It's hard to believe that it's almost time for OTAs again, right around the corner. It's you know, the Orioles season hasn't gone the way any of us wanted it, so it's back to football for me. I'm looking forward to seeing how this rest of this offseason progresses.
Yeah, really been enjoying the expectation series. Also been loving the ideas for film study shorts people have been sending in. Keep them coming. I want to get you guys going. If you're interested in doing an analytics project, I'm interested in working with you on it. I'm not looking for any authorship credit. I'm only looking to have you, show you maybe have your findings on a show would be what I'd be talking about. And I'll try and help you in whatever I can in terms of modeling that if you have an interest in that kind of work. Gabe, thanks again for coming on.
Thanks, Ken. It's always a pleasure.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365, because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. T&Cs apply. Available in app only.